From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
All right, you ready, John?
Yep,
John, the boss of Denver?
I'm ready.
Hey, you ready, Stu? Oh, wait, Stu's not here. Totally ruins this introduction I had planned for this introduction of the of this. I am handsome Hunter Deucing, and this is the Midnight Movie Cowboys. And this week, week three of Rock Month, we're talking about The Dictators.
Yep.
I'm bummed Stu's not here because I wanted to hear what he thought of The Dictators because I really had no idea what he was going to think about them.
I think he was enjoying them because he was recommending them to Richard had chimed in on our group, and I think he said he needed to go listen to them.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of an underrated New York band from that same 70s like rock scene.
They're incredibly unknown. They're actually even unknown to punk rockers.
Well, like, it's funny. When I first heard of The Dictators, which I'll tell that story in a bit, but when I first heard of them and I looked them up, I knew who Ross the Boss was because of Manowar.
Right.
Like, Manowar is more famous than The Dictators are.
Isn't that sad?
I love Manowar. Don't get me wrong. They're cheesy.
I've never listened to them.
They're cheesy as hell, but they're fun. Like, it's like, you might like their first record. I think you might enjoy their first record just because it's a good time. Mm-hmm. And it has Orson Welles on it. Unless you listen to the re-recorded one, which in that case you get Christopher Lee, R.I.P.
Really?
Yeah. But, Orson Welles was on a couple of their albums. But, anyway. So, how did you get into The Dictators, John? Because I know you're a big fan.
I had read about them, reading those History of Punk books that started coming out in, like, 1989 or so. And I heard them. Rhino put out this compilation of New York punk rock. And they had Cars and Girls was The Dictators track. That's the first time I heard of them. And then I don't think I started actually buying their CDs because they were never considered like, you want to get into punk rock, you'll get the Ramones, the Buzzcocks, you know. Sex Pistols, The Clash, well, the first two Clash records.
Yeah.
Stiff Little Fingers was better known. I mean, I just put it that way. You didn't really, or Dead Boys, you just never, The Dictators, you know, apparently they weren't even considered part of that scene or really mixed in with it as much as you would think. You know, they thought they were like a funny version of the Blue Oyster Cult. That's actually how they viewed it. They had the same producer and manager and everything. And they were friends with Richard Meltzer, the rock music critic, just like the Blue Oyster Cult was. And I bought Go Girl Crazy, I think in 1998 on CD, finally. You know, and I'd seen it for years and just never. Cars and Girls is a fun song, but it didn't scream go buy this record or anything.
It's kind of sounds like a Beach Boys type.
Yeah, and keep in mind, most of their stuff was just not on CD. Hardly, you know, I later found out Manitoba's Wild Kingdom. I think that was the second one I got, which was their basically them renamed. And really enjoyed that album. And then I think I got Fuck 'Em If They Can't Take a Joke, the live album. And I played it endlessly. And then that's when I really got into them. Like, that was how they were supposed to sound. And then Blood Brothers came out on CD in a special edition. Love that. Love the DFFD album. And just I was just a fanatical fan by, like, 2001.
Yeah, because that's when they were getting back together.
Yeah, so they were doing the reunion tours, and the sense of humor was, you know, really grabbed me. And it was one of those things where that band just hit me at the right time to hear their stuff. You know, it's like I may not have been as open to digging them 10 years before, you know, although the Blood Brothers album is pretty damn good. But the problem with their discography is, as we'll get into, is like it takes a bit of a patience with the first two records at least to kind of dig them because it's not the best production in the world.
I really like the first two records, but
yeah,
I like all their records really.
I don't think they made a bad record.
No.
I'm just saying when you're getting into this and this is after you've already been into rock music for most of your life,
mm-hmm.
You have to compromise your your open-minded listening on the sound quality and everything. And even Andy Chernoff, I think, admits like the first two records are pretty poorly produced.
Right. I'm going to tell the story of how I found out about the Dictators, because I kind of got to know them pretty up close and personal. This is a story I've told on the podcast before. Because we're doing a show on the Dictators, I'll tell it again in a little more detail. So when I was living in Memphis, I had a Muay Thai teacher who was this guy named Mark who had a band called the Subteens. And the Subteens they're a Memphis punk rock band that really never went anywhere, but they made really good music. Like, the two albums they made are really solid. Burn Your Cardigan, which I think you can download still for free off of like a website somewhere. Really, like, it's kind of in the vein of that New York sound, but, like, applied to, like, sort of a Memphis setting. Like, it's very, like, real Midtown Memphis, like, not touristy. It's like, oh, if you lived in Midtown Memphis, like, you'll probably vibe off these songs. You know, like, you'll see the sights and the places that they're talking about. They were a band that sort of, they started to get some traction, but then drugs sort of killed that. But they still play locally. And as far as I know, I haven't seen them in a while, but Mark's still around doing his Muay Thai thing. But so he told me, he said, hey, my band's opening for Andy Chernoff, the bassist / somewhat vocalist songwriter for the Dictators.
He's kind of the Brian Wilson of the Dictators.
He really is. Like, it's his band, basically. Yeah. Like, when you told me the Dictators, like, Ross the Boss is like, ah, we want to do the Dictators, but Andy won't do it. I was, like, thinking, well, who cares? He's the bass player. But then, oh, wait, no, it's actually his band. Like, he wrote all the songs. Like, he's the genius.
Although it should be noted, around the time, I think it was after Manifest Destiny, Chernoff didn't actually want to tour or do anything.
No.
He just wanted to write songs and be sort of like the mastermind of the group, and they would just go out and perform.
Well, as we'll see on Manifest Destiny, he's not playing bass even. Mark the Animal Mendoza is, and he's playing keyboards. But anyway, so I went to see Andy Chernoff, and I was told he was going to be singing acoustic songs, and he was going to be telling stories in between. Uh-huh. So, you know, all the old punk rockers do this. They parlay their talents into telling stories.
Yeah.
But he does it better than Rollins or Jello Biafra or any of those people.
Or Marky Ramone.
Or way better. Just because like, he has a song to go with everything.
Right.
So he'll play you an acoustic song, and, you know, there's a musical element to it. Whereas a lot of these guys just want to get paid to go up and yap, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of them have great stories, don't get me wrong. But and they're worth hearing, but, you know, you get a little more bang for your buck with what Chernoff was doing. So I went to – he was performing at the High Tone, which is a sort of infamous club in Memphis. I think it still exists, but not in the venue that was there, which was you know, a great club for music, my favorite place to go see live music in the world. And Mark's band played. They were awesome. They played covers and original stuff, and, you know, so funny. Mark's like, you know, the Dictators are one of the greatest bands ever, and, you know – and, you know, fuck them if they can't take a joke and all that stuff. So so he plays, brings the house down. Subteens always, like, just absolutely destroy. Then Andy goes up, and he does his set. And I can't remember the set list. I'm sure if I looked it up, I could find it. But I do remember him playing an acoustic version of Who Will Save Rock and Roll off the DFFD album. And he plays some other songs. But he told stories about the New York rock scene, told stories about Gene Simmons, like anybody in the New York Dolls, you know, anybody in New York, and but specifically focused on Joey Ramone. And because when I looked him up, I noticed he played on Joey Ramone's solo record.
He also did a lot of ghost guitaring on the Ramones 80s albums.
Oh,
along with Walter Lurie of the Heartbreakers.
I believe it, because Johnny was too fucking grumpy to...
Didn't care.
You know, he didn't care.
Johnny knew it was over. I think Johnny was like, we can just do oldies tours because our records are not going to sell.
Right. He'd rather go watch the Yankees game.
Yeah.
But no, and you can tell when you listen to those later Ramones records, because the guitar playing's so clean.
Right,
It doesn't have Johnny's sort of messiness.
Because it's not Johnny, it's Walter Lurie, or it's Chernoff, or one of those guys.
But so I was like, okay, cool. So I went and I saw the show, and it was great. It was emotional. Like, he talked about being with Joey when he was dying and stuff, and, you know, he had a song to go with every story, and it was a really great show. Like, I don't know if he still mm-hmm. does these talking acoustic shows, but it's well worth checking out.
Yeah.
But so, you know, I was really moved by it, and I went up to him after the show, and I was with my girlfriend, Susan, my mm-hmm. girlfriend at the time, and she was there because, you know, I wanted to go, and it was something fun to do. And she got all dressed up. She had this little dress on and, you know, this, like, very sort of Southern Pollyanna-ish outfit. Mm-hmm. And, like, a little bow in her hair. She was all dolled up. She looked really good. Like, way dressed up for a show like this. You know, for right. a punk, sub-teens punk rock show. And
It's hard to imagine anybody dressing up for a punk show.
Yeah, I know, yeah. But she always dressed up to go out. Like, she just liked to look good. So she looked great. And she's standing behind me. Like a woman should. No, I'm kidding. No. Remain three steps behind me at all times. No. But so she was standing behind me, and I went up to Andy and I was like, "Hey man, you know, that was a great show. I was really moved by it, you know, I was just like telling him how much I liked it. I just wanted to tell him, like, hey man, that was great, you know, that's all I wanted to do. I didn't want to start a conversation or anything." And Andy looks right past me. He looks at me and tunnel vision right past me, and he just kind of goes and he reaches out and shepherds me aside. I'm not Brian Williamsing it where I say like he pushed or he shoved. He shepherded. He just went like, "Yes, you will move aside because I am gesturing so." And right. he looked at Susan and he go and with like, I mean, I swear it was like hawk vision. Like, he looked like a yeah. bird, and he went, "And who might you be?"
Jeez.
And Susan, the look on her face, her eyes got huge, her jaw just sort of fell open, and I stepped back, mm-hmm. not because like I was like, "Oh, my girls, my games." I mean, I was totally secure in mm-hmm. you know, that nothing was going to happen. I knew I did not think for a minute that she was going to, you know, that anything was going to happen, like her going away with him or anything.
So you didn't like utter like a switch thing on. You went Muay Thai, motherfucker.
Yeah. Like, I didn't go like right I didn't. I didn't grab Mark and go like, "Let's kick this guy's ass."
You kick know? Him right in the back of the knee. Like, oh, it's Muay Thai.
Yeah. I just like break his shin.
And then put your hands in the Tony Jaa hand position, the stance. You know?
There was a stacks of rings nearby, and I shoved my arms at them.
You did the ritual dance.
Yes. Yeah. And no, so I didn't feel threatened. I didn't feel intimidated. Yeah. But I was like, I was gobsmacked. You know?
Right.
I was like, whoa.
Yeah, it's kind of rude.
it was really rude. Yeah. But it was hilarious at the same time. Like, right. I was amused, and I was shocked, and I was sort of grossed out, like, all at once.
Yeah.
And Susan was polite. I stepped back and just looked at the exchange. Like, I had to get the panoramic widescreen view. And, like, thinking about it, I was like, why did I step away? And I was like, no, because I wanted to look at this exchange. But, and Andy was much, Susan's very short. Andy was much taller than her.
Yeah.
And he was looking down at her, and he just had this look of, like, he looked like a kid who'd just, like, seen something, like, he was fascinated by. Like, the expression on his face was just too funny. He just looked like he found something he really wanted. But she was just like, she just answers quite like, "Oh, I'm Susan. Hi, it was a great show, you know." Mm-hmm. And he was just like, oh, and he was like asking questions about her. But she was like, "I gotta go." Like, she looked like really, she just had this look like she was kind of embarrassed, you know, like,
yeah.
Like, oh gosh, like, you know, my boyfriend went up to talk to this guy and he just totally ignored him and started talking to me. But,
yeah. Yeah, I think Chernoff should have realized he's not John Bon Jovi.
No, exactly.
And there's no girl at his show. Like, any girl at his show is going to be there because they're with their boyfriend who digs his music.
Right, like, she was totally not the type of person that would go to one of those shows. You know, like, she was there because I wanted to be there. And she looked, and, you know, I'm not bragging or anything, but she was the best looking person there. Like, she was gorgeous, you know, like, she looked great. Like, and so he saw this girl who was really attractive and you know, saw her with me and was hoping she was a fan, I think. he could vibe
yeah,
off that.
But, he should have known better.
He should have known better. But it was funny. Like, but it delayed my getting into the Dictators because it was kind of weird.
Yeah, that's kind of off-putting.
Like, I was kind of like, oh, gosh, you know, like, I thought it was funny. Like, I wasn't offended or anything, even though it was really rude and all that.
Well, then I believe he ended up, like, in legal procession with Handsome Dick and Ross the Boss.
Really?
Over using the Dictators on tour. Yeah, something like that.
Well, because
there was something a little messy about that recently.
Well, because I know that Ross the Boss and Daniel Ray and Handsome Dick were performing under the Dictators NYC.
Yeah.
It's like one of those.
I think that was some sort of thing where they had to say that, but there was some sort of conflict with the name.
Which is strange because it's not like a big name.
No.
You know?
Not at all.
Like, if you're not using it, why not let them use it?
And honestly, when I think of the Dictators, I don't think of Chernoff's playing as being really essential.
I don't think of his playing as essential, but
his songwriting is great, but I mean, they're not going to put out new albums, so it's like, they're just touring with the songs.
Exactly.
It's an oldies tour, and it's like, it's Ross the Boss. I mean, I don't think Top Ten's with them anymore, Scott Kempner. But,
yeah, I think
Daniel
Ray is playing with them.
So it's pretty much Handsome Dick and it's Ross the Boss. So it's like that's really the Dictators to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Chernoff's didn't really have a good singing voice. I mean, I think by the time they were doing live album, Chernoff was letting Handsome Dick sing stuff he sang.
Yeah, like I was listening to the Dictators live records and a lot of the songs that Chernoff sang, I heard Handsome Dick singing. So it was kind of fun to hear, you know, the different versions of them. But yeah. Handsome Dick, definitely more personality than Chernoff.
Oh, definitely. That's why they made him the singer. That was just going to happen.
Yeah, like, okay, well, let's get into the first record.
Yeah.
The Dictators Go Girl Crazy, 1975, produced by Murray Krugman and Sandy Pearlman.
Mm-hmm. Also the same team who gave us the Blue Oyster Cult.
Blue Oyster Cult, baby. And the lineup for this record, you have Ross the Boss, Funicello, guitar. Mm-hmm. You have Scott Kempner, rhythm guitar. You have Stu Boy King on drums.
Mm-hmm.
You have Andy Chernoff, bass guitar, keyboards, and vocals. And he does most of the lead vocals on this album, right?
Yeah, he does.
And Handsome Dick Manitoba, he's sort of the Flava Flav on this album.
Right.
Like, he's doing a lot of the interludes and, like, a lot of the choruses and stuff.
He was sort of the mascot.
Yeah, that's what they called him.
What I had always heard is he was sort of the mascot who he was kind of like the roadie who basically became
kind of
the singer.
The hype man, you know?
Yeah.
but the cover of the album has him on it.
Mm-hmm.
It has him standing there in the locker room with the Handsome Dick Manitoba jacket. So, you know, he did have a big role in the group, but he wasn't the lead singer at this point. That wouldn't happen for a couple albums.
And this is when the group was really – it was one of those things where Chernoff, all the songs are based on things he liked. Wrestling, late night television, eating at White Castle. That it was sort of their whole cultural thing of you know where they lived in New York. It was kind of their neighborhood vibe. So they, you know, Andy Chernoff had said, and before this he did a fanzine called Teenage Wasteland, which is said to be pretty hilarious, but I've never seen it anywhere, and I always hope somebody will reissue it or something, but no, I guess there's a lot of libelous stuff in that zine. It's sort of like he thought everybody across the country was like him. They love the Crusher and the Bruiser.
Yeah.
They love going to wrestling matches, and all teens across America love staying up all night watching old movies. And,
Cars and Girls.
And love the Beach Boys, and you know, and it's just like he thought everything was on his level. And the sales of this album, which by today's standards would actually be a really well-selling
album. It would be a hit today.
Yeah, it was like, you know, it tanked. It was a bit of a flop. And
but you know, you talked about how Andy thought people across America loved what he loved, which turned out to be pretty niche. That's what's great about this album, though.
it's an expression of a niche.
Yeah, exactly.
Who would listen to Lynyrd Skynyrd and think, oh, everybody across the country is going to relate to these guys?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, but everybody, you know, it's such a fun record, it's hard to dislike.
I mean, I honestly think, like, and this is a really kind of cliche music critic thing to say, but I think it's like the Sgt. Pepper of like New York rock albums. Like,
It's definitely the shot across the. It's really it started a lot.
I mean, like I just love the attitude of this record. Like you open it up with Handsome Dick going, "I don't need to be here." You know, with my vest.
And
yet
he's
doing.
And he's imitating the Crusher.
Yeah.
He's imitating the Crusher.
This is just a hobby for me.
Yeah, he's doing. He's imitating the Crusher. So. And he's like just doing a wrestling impression.
On the
you
song,
know?
Back to Africa, which one of you will be my slave?
I mean, even Master Race Rock is completely politically incorrect.
Oh, I know. Like, Back to Africa
the title
and
is not a pro-Nazi song, by the way. To those listening for the first time, it is sort of a stance of themselves at that time where they hated – obviously, Shirtoff hated the Eagles.
Yeah.
And so the whole album is like a slam at the Eagles and probably Lynyrd Skynyrd and all the stuff that was big at the time, because the biggest rock thing going was the Eagles, and then there was Skynyrd and you know, Allman Brothers and that sort of stuff. So it's like you get lyrics like hippies are squares with long hair and they don't wear no underwear, and then it's like country rock is on the way. I don't, you know, it's like they hated country rock, obviously.
I love the lyrics on this record so
much. And it has to be listened to from that context of 1975. And even Chernoff admitted years later, he said, nobody really knew how to record this music. He says, because we hadn't heard the AC/DC records in America. So nobody really knew how to record this type of stuff. He goes, when you heard AC/DC's Highway to Hell, he said, that's how our first album should have sounded, with that heavy guitar and everything. But when you listen to it, it sounds very hollow and tinny in some ways, or too echoey. And he said at that time, the only band that you could look at for production setting a standard was The Who. So, and that's probably their biggest influence musically is The Who.
Yeah, whenever a band does kind of pushes the envelope in terms of heavy, hard guitars, you always hear about like how nobody knew how to record it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like when death metal became a thing. Mm-hmm. Everybody was going down to Morris Sound Studios in Florida because nobody else was like – it just sounded – because that music was so hard to capture because it would just sound like garbage unless you got like Scott Burns or whoever producing it, and he could kind of make it sound, you know, decipherable.
Somehow he probably accidentally figured it out. It's funny. I just read the Johnny Rotten's book, and he recorded some stuff at Lee Perry's studio. And if you listen to any old Lee Perry dub track, you always hear a door opening. And – you always think that's some sort of effect that Johnny Rotten said. No, that's actually the creaky door in his studio. He always records it and puts it in his track. So.
It's just like a trademark. It's like a watermark.
Yeah. It's like that's a creaky, awful door. That's it. Is the orchestra or whatever it's called. Or the Arc, you know.
All right,
the Arc Studios.
So I'm going to go through the track listing here. We got The Next Big Thing. Good opener. We got a cover of Sonny Bono's I Got You, Babe. We got Back to Africa, Master Race Rock, Teen Generate, California Sun, which is, of course, a cover that the Ramones also did, Two Tub Man, Weekend, and I Live for Cars and Girls, that song you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Now, so, California Sun, Dictator's version or Ramones version?
The Ramones version is better.
Ramones version?
Yeah.
I kind of like this one. Just
probably because you've heard the Ramones version too many times.
No, you're probably right. I will say you're probably right, but I love, like, just how silly they are with it. Like, and a pukaroo.
Yeah. It's like The Next Big Thing was later lifted by the Ramones for Something to Do.
Yeah, it sounds like a Ramones
song. The Dictators acknowledged it on the Ramones tribute record they did for a Swedish label. I think it was White Jazz, where they did they were playing, that was the song they chose, but they went in, Ross the Boss went into the guitar solo for The Next Big Thing. So like, which, that's a track worth seeking out if you're looking for
I gotta look for that. That's
Dictator's track. But yeah, it's a fun record from beginning to end, and you can see how they thought they were going to start something. And
I've listened to it so many times. Like, just, it was love at first sight.
I've listened to it quite a bit. So
what do you give this record? What's your rating?
I give it like a 9.
Yeah,
it's just a fun listen.
I give it a 9 too. I was tempted to give it a 10, but it's not. But the production's just not there.
Yeah, the production is the only minus to it.
And so, what's your favorite track?
I love Two Tub Man.
That one is. I was tempted to go with that one, but I'm going to go with Weekend.
Yeah, I love. Yeah, Weekend's a great tune.
Just
too.
Give me a Soma.
Yeah. But Two Tub Man kind of breaks all the rules for rock tunes at that time.
Yeah.
because it kind of stops and starts and builds in a way that that songs weren't really supposed to do that at the back then. If you listen to it, it's a real genre breaker. Like, I, you know, it just keeps building, and it's almost inspired by, like, wrestling interviews and all these other things that, you know, what those guys were into.
Well, and look at Handsome Dick on the cover, you know. Totally, oh, yeah. Total wrestler.
That'll tell you straight up right there. It's funny because I've conversed with him on Facebook on a friend's page who is friends with him, and we've talked about, you know, wrestlers back in the day. He's a huge wrestling, you know, massive wrestling fan.
I buy it. Okay, so next record. So the band sort of, this album's failure, I think the band sort of didn't fall apart, but Chernoff left and then came back. But when he left, Mark the Animal Mendoza filled in on bass. And so Chernoff came in, and Chernoff on this record plays keyboards, and he does lead and background vocals. You have Handsome Dick back sharing vocal duties. You got Ross the Boss. Top 10 is on rhythm guitar. Was he on the last record?
Top 10, yeah.
Okay.
Scott Kempner was
Scott Kempner, but okay. Because I know him as top. So when I see Scott Kempner, I'm like, who's that?
Yeah. Mark Mendoza is basically the new guy.
Yeah, he's the new guy, and he would go on to join Twisted Sister.
Yeah, and you can actually find on YouTube, you can find some concerts that were shot with the early home video cameras showing Mark Mendoza with them and everything.
Yeah, I saw those on YouTube because it was clearly him. It wasn't Chernoff.
Yeah, it was from them. I was surprised. I was like, whoa, somebody videotaped the Mendoza years.
Yeah, so and it's produced by Murray Krugman and Sandy Pearlman. Mm-hmm. And the song track listing is Exposed, Heartache, Sleeping with the TV On, Disease, Hey Boys, Stepping Out, Science Gone Too Far, Young Fast, Scientific, and Search and Destroy, which we know from the Stooges, obviously.
Yeah, and this may have been the first Stooges cover done by anybody.
Yeah, probably, because this is pretty close.
They were not a well-loved band, so it's like the
especially not at this time. Like, was it the...
No,
Didi Ramone said, if you met somebody who liked the Stooges, you became friends with them.
Yeah.
There weren't very many of us.
It's funny because if I wear my Stooges t-shirt, as I'm apt to do, someplace like a waiter at Old Chicago, go, oh man, that is such a cool shirt. You know, it's like now you'll have people who know them. If I wear an MC5 shirt, then I have everybody over the age of 55 going, hey, those guys, I remember them.
You know what's so funny is I always laugh. I remember when I saw the Evil Dead remake. Mm-hmm. There's a chick in that movie wearing an MC5 shirt. I turned to my friend in the theater and I went, no girl that age wears an MC5 shirt. You know, doesn't happen. My friend didn't even know
the
MC5
anymore,
was.
Please.
Yeah, it's just like anytime I see a young person wearing an MC5 shirt in a movie, I just turn and I go, there's the director. You know, telling people what to wear.
Which means Sam Raimi have seen the MC5.
I guarantee you that girl in that movie doesn't even know who the hell the MC5 are. It's just, it's fun. Like, what was it, Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, when the girls are listening to Kick Out the Jams at the coffee shop. Yeah. It's like, what world does this happen in? You know, just Rob Zombie's
It doesn't happen in any world. Not in the real world.
And, like, isn't Wayne Kramer the only one that's still alive?
Wayne Kramer and, God, he might be. Because I think the drummer passed away a couple of years ago.
So I love the song Henry Rollins did with Mother Superior and Wayne Kramer, L.A. Money Train.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Preach it, Brother Wayne! Oh, he's doing the MC5 thing. But
right.
And Wayne was just on Dee Snider's podcast. And even Dee was like, I didn't listen to the MC5 till recently. I saw the documentary. He was like, I didn't know who they were.
Right.
But, no, it's funny, but you know, they were a band that didn't like the Stooges that sort of disintegrated pretty quickly.
Yeah,
but didn't Handsome Dick do didn't he do vocals for an MC5 reunion?
He did on when they toured Europe. When they toured here and when they came to Colorado, I got the singer from the Lemonheads, Evan Dando, and then I got the singer from Mudhoney, Mark Arm, I think is his name.
Oh, fuck that guy.
Yeah, and Europe got Nikki Helicopter and Handsome Dick Manitoba. It's like, well, who did I piss off in a previous life?
Yeah.
To get the show that I got.
To get the, I don't know, I think Mark Arm might be more politically aligned with the MC5, probably, but...
Oh, yeah, certainly, you know.
You know, with the weird Seattle politics, but...
He made a dumbass announcement before he did the anti-draft song, American Ruse, and it's like, from what I can tell, there's no draft going on right now.
Yeah, I was like, it's... Yeah, that's over.
Sergeant Hulka, and there ain't no draft, son. but yeah, Manifest Destiny was... It's funny because this is when punk was sort of breaking out, and it's not really a punk album.
No, it's not at all. In fact, I think it kind of takes the sort of harmonizing Beach Boys sound further.
It's trying to be like a New York Beach Boys album.
Yeah, I was thinking like that when I was listening to it, like Heartache, Sleeping with the TV On. These are like songs you harmonize to Exposed. Like you harmonize to them, you sing along with them.
I've been exposed!
Feats! Do your stuff.
Yeah, it's like it's funny because it doesn't really seem like a Dictator's record the way we know him until like the last three tracks.
No, yeah, like Search and Destroy. It's like, whoa, there's the Dictators right there. But
yeah, and it's like Science Gone Too Far, which people shouted for it when they came to Denver and did their live show when they were taking requests, but they didn't play it.
And this movie definitely takes the late night movies thing, like with watching The Thin Man on TV.
That's a total churn off, you know, his own habits as songwriting. And Young, Fast, Scientific is a wrestling reference because commentators always say, he's young, he's fast, he's scientific. it's an old saying from the announcers.
So what do you give this record?
I give it a 7 because the production is absolutely wretched, and supposedly the master tape was damaged in the studio.
Oh, really?
Like I've got the original vinyl record. I paid like $15 for it back when there was no CD available, and it didn't sound good. And I'm like, you know, I got a good turntable here. What's going on? Then I got the Japanese import, which I paid like $20 for. It sounded worse.
Wow.
And then I know they put it out on like Humming Wounded Bird Records or something, which was a subsidiary of Warner Brothers, but I didn't hear anything about the master being an improvement at all.
Well, I give it about an 8, and I like the songs on it a lot. It's not as good as Go Girl Crazy.
No.
But I like a lot of the songs. Like, you know, it's one of those albums I sing along with everything on it. Like,
yeah, it's a good album. It just doesn't the production quality is just fucking horrible.
No, yeah.
It's maybe the worst, probably the worst produced record I've ever heard in my life.
I don't know if I'd go that far. But.
No, and I like the songs, and I love the band, but it's the worst produced record I've ever heard. And I don't know who to blame. I guess I can blame Krugman and Perlman, or whoever ran the studio or was the engineer, because this just sounds bad.
What's your favorite song?
I really like Science Gone Too Far.
I think my favorite's Sleeping with the TV On.
Yeah, that'd be like a third favorite, probably.
Yeah,
because I also love Young, Fast, Scientific, and you know, they. But I don't think they're actually focused to what they really became here.
Mm-mm.
Like you could almost say it isn't a Dictator. It sounds more like a Flamin' Groovies record.
Yeah, it does. No, it really doesn't. It's, you know, the Dictators really sort of crystallize with the next record, which is
right.
Blood Brothers.
Oh
1978, and
yeah.
Mark the Animal Mendoza left. He joined. Twisted Sister.
Mm-hmm.
So we got, this is the first album where Handsome Dick takes complete control of the lead vocals. And you got Ross the Boss, you got Top 10, you got Andy Chernoff back on the bass, and Richie Teeter on drums.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, produced by Krugman and Perlman, and the track listing, we got Faster and Louder, Baby Let's Twist, No Tomorrow, The Minnesota Strip, Stay With Me, I Stand Tall, Borneo Jimmy, What It Is, and Slow Death, which is a Flamin' Groovies cover, as uh-huh. you just brought up. And apparently, I don't know if this is true or not, because this is the font of knowledge that is Wikipedia, but apparently Bruce Springsteen counts down the songs on the song Faster and Louder
I know he's on the record.
Yeah, like, I heard he's the guy who goes 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4 or something.
Oh, I probably is, because I know that Ross the Boss confirmed that he, Springsteen was on the record.
And he was a fan of the band.
Yeah, he's a fan. Like, Springsteen, who I consider unlistenable, is apparently a big fan of, like, the Ramones and the Dictators. Yeah, and all that stuff, so.
Yeah, Springsteen's one of those guys, just, like, I consider him to be, like, boring dad rock. You know.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's like, you know, that's for your parents wearing the turtleneck sweaters.
Sure.
Daddy-o.
Yeah.
Daddy. And even though there's some people I know my age who actually like him, but it's just, it's a totally different thing for me. It's like, no. Sorry, I didn't grow up near New Jersey. Don't really care. So.
No. I mean, you know, I've heard some of his songs and I go, okay, that's good songwriting, but it's just not something I listen to. But,
yeah.
But so, but this is like a full-fledged punk, like New York punk record.
Where, yeah, like it, I can't.
This is as John Spash would say, sounds like the Ramones. You know? Yeah.
So it's like the Ramones.
Like when I heard Faster and Louder, I went, well, this describes this record. It's Faster and Louder.
And yeah, the interesting thing is, it's like they finally figured out how to produce her songs.
Yeah. I mean, they really captured their sound well. Like, Faster and Louder. Like, this album, like, you can listen to it in one go and then listen to it again. You know?
Yeah.
It's just...
This, to me, is the first really great Dictators record.
Yeah, this is their first 10 out of 10, if you ask me.
They figured it out. They knocked it out of the park with this one. Minnesota Strip was later plagiarized by Danzig for Just a Kid.
That's where I was listening to the no, you're right, because I was listening to Minnesota Strip and I went, I've heard those riffs before. Where have I heard those riffs before? And yeah. I couldn't place it. But when you said Twist of Kano, I was like, that's who ripped that off.
Twist of Kano, yeah.
Rock my brain off. Yeah. And then there's
totally
there's
lifted.
James Hetfield in the background.
Yeah.
Oh, Twist of Kano. But yeah, this album is more is the punkiest record so far.
Right.
But what would you say is your favorite song on it?
I love Baby Let's Twist.
Oh, that's an interesting choice. My favorite's Stay With Me.
Yeah, that's a great tune.
Oh, I
there isn't a bad tune on here, in fact.
No, there's really not. Like,
I'll give you my rating now. It's a 10. It's an easy 10.
It's an easy,
can listen to this beginning to end. It's perfect.
It's easy 10. I love I Stand Tall.
Yeah.
And I love that song because, you know, The Dictators sort of remind me of the Ramones, where you'll get some, like, unapologetic, patriotic New York shit in there.
Yeah, that should have been New York's theme song after 9/11.
Oh, absolutely.
But now you might as well call New York, you know, the new Mecca.
It's the People's Republic of New York under de Blasio. Yeah. Like, was it, I listened to the new Agnostic Front record, and they're sort of, you know, the New York hardcore, and they had this song called Old New York that was like, I miss the old New York. I was like, oh, wait, just wait, guys, it's coming back, you know, because it's going to turn into a shithole again like it was in the 70s.
Oh, yeah, you can have another Bob Grant on the radio. That's mm-hmm.
Like, Ed Koch is back, you know? Don't worry, the old New York's coming, it's going to turn into
everything comes around again. It's like, everything comes around again.
That murder rate's climbing, you know. Mm-hmm. They got rid of the law and order mayors, now you got the guy who just says, whatever, man, do your thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I love I Stand Tall, I love Borneo Jimmy, Faster and Louder, Baby Let's Twist, No Tomorrow, Minnesota. It's not a bad song on here. It's 34 minutes just of pure greatness. So yeah, we both agree this is a 10 out of 10. Perfect album. Like, if you're going to start out with the Dictators, it's a good one. Even though, like, I started with Go Girl Crazy. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of, I don't know, I thought it was a good introduction because when you get to Blood Brothers, it's like, wow! You know?
Yeah.
Even though, like, and that's not taking anything away from the last two albums, but, you know, this is the one where their sound really just crystallizes.
Yeah, they figured it out. This is the knocked out of the park.
Yeah, it's probably their definitive record, but it's their Rocket to Russia. After this album, did they break up? Like, what happened? Because they put out their live "Fuck 'Em If They Can't Take a Joke" cassette, but I don't.
That's because they were only doing kind of oldies. Reunion shows, you know, kind of nostalgia. Like, you know, like a band I love, like Y&T. mm-hmm. always for years was always doing reunions in the Bay Area basically to pay their rent or their mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
They would do that annual reunion in California, you know, in the Bay. They'd do that big show, and that would be their money for the year.
Yeah.
It's because they didn't make it big, and that's kind of I think that's what happened to the Dictators. I think they all had to – I heard like I think I read Handsome Big Manitoba was a cab driver.
Yeah.
You know, Chernoff did work for other bands, and Ross the Boss started working on Manowar or whatever.
He started working on Manowar, the greatest band of all time.
Scott Kempner, I think, collaborated with Pat Benatar's husband.
And Ross the Boss also produced Anthrax's demo.
Yep.
So, you know, he was pretty active at doing stuff. And, you know, Manowar became bigger than the Dictators did.
Yeah.
Like you said, unfortunately. I will say the Dictators are way better than Manowar.
Yeah.
Manowar is still pretty awesome.
Well, the Dictators are better than most
most bands of that, period. You know?
Most bands of that era. I mean, they're just like, I mean, they're literally, if it wasn't for the Ramones, they would probably be the best New York punk band.
Yeah, I agree with that.
They would have been the New York punk band and would have represented it if the Ramones didn't exist.
So they put out this can't fuck them if they can't take a joke live thing, which I haven't heard.
Mm. Oh, you haven't heard this?
Mm-mm. No, it wasn't in the folder, and I just
had... I thought I threw it in there.
Oh, I didn't see it.
I wonder if somebody snatched it out.
Could have happened. Well, give us a rundown on that one.
It's a pretty good. Really great live record back in the days when this is raw. This is, there's no like studio tinkering or overdubs or anything. This is a real, sounds like almost like a bootleg record, but it rocks. It's you get the Next Big Thing. You basically get all the stuff cherry picked from their three albums. Not always the best stuff though, but you get like a live version of Minnesota Strip and Borneo Jimmy. And you get basically the first time you hear New York, New York.
Okay.
Which became a Handsome Dig, Manitoba's Wild Kingdom.
Yeah, it's on the Manitoba. I do want to talk about, let's talk about that
album. You also have Loyola, which is not on any Dictators record. So.
It's on one of their live albums. It's on the New York, New York one, I think.
It's on the live albums, but you never get a studio version.
Oh,
No. You have to buy a 45 single to get the studio version.
Oh, really?
They recorded that in the 90s.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just show you how weird it was. Because that's what they did, is they put out a single on that old label, I think it was Norton Records or whatever, that put out stuff by them and the Cramps, you know, Rare Things. I think it was actually started by a former Cramps member. So,
okay.
Yeah, but there's a great cover of The Moon Upstairs, which is a Mott the Hoople song. It's a really fun live record. It's actually, if your ears have a tolerance for the live sound, it's a good introduction to them. You know, I think it's one you could definitely use for an introduction. I don't even know if it's like easily available these days or even in print.
Yeah, we don't have it in our folder, so it definitely wasn't there for me to listen to.
I think you can hear it on Spotify. I think it should be on Spotify, but it's a good record. I give it a good 9. You also get Handsome Dick Manitoba's Stage Banter.
Oh, I love that.
Where he actually says stuff like, totally taken out of Marvel Comics, Dictators Assemble! You know? Yeah, you gotta hear it, man. It's great.
I got to. That's the only thing of theirs I haven't heard.
Oh, actually, it is available on CD used from 1694, so it's already a collector's item, so... I would say it's on Spotify, so you can definitely hear it on there, but it's great.
So many members of the Dictators were in a group that it was kind of a Handsome Dick Manitoba put together called Manitoba's Wild Kingdom. And it was basically the Dictators, but under a different name.
Yeah, because they were never successful as the Dictators, so they could change their name. It didn't matter. They could still get a record contract.
It was, you know, you had Handsome Dick, you had Andy Chernoff, you had Ross the Boss. Scott Kempner was in there for a period. Daniel Ray, who produced some of the Ramones records, played guitar in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they only did one record called And You
in
1990. And it had the tracks The Party Starts Now, Haircut and Attitude, New York, New York, DWI, I Want You Tonight, Fired Up, The Perfect High, Had It Coming, Prototype, and Speedball. And this album it's almost a little more heavy metal.
Yeah, they were actually they had seen Slayer like start to really blow up, and they were like, well, Slayer to them was combining punk and metal,
mm-hmm.
so they figured they could do basically a Slayer record. But
it doesn't sound like Slayer.
With their sense of humor, it ends up just being a dictator.
Yeah, it does.
For a name.
It was dictators with heavier guitars. You know?
Right. That's basically what it was. And, interesting thing is New York, New York is salvaged from the live album. And they changed one lyric because if you listen to the live version of New York, New York, he says, junkies, and no offense to our listeners, junkies, fags, and squares.
Mm-hmm.
And then he changes it to, in this, it's junkies, queens, and squares, I believe.
Yeah, it's a little softer, but still means...
Still
means the homosexuals.
Yeah, but it's funny that in 1981, you could, you know, get away with the other word, and then here...
I didn't realize it was as early as 1990 that fags became taboo.
Yeah, it was... There was start... Very gradually, they started...
But that's because, like, I was still in the schoolyard... And
right, where you were hearing it every day.
Yeah, it was, you know, faggot was just what you called your friends, you know?
Right. You know, it's a fun record. It's not, I don't think the sound preserves great on it because of the product. It's got that late 80s production and everything.
Yeah,
and
it does.
It's so goofy, it almost sounds like Weird Al making fun of Slayer. You know, and it's funny because, you know, we talked about Hard and Heavy, the video magazine on the last episode, where there was Manitoba's Wild Kingdom did a big interview with Hard and Heavy. Where they were interviewed at a White Castle.
Oh, well, that I for your birthday I posted that picture of Handsome Dick and a.
Yeah. They're White Castle fanatics, you know. And
it's even on the cover of DFFD. You see White Castle sliders.
That's true. And this is, you know, it's funny because it really is the same. It's just a Dictator's record with 1990 production.
Yeah.
And Haircut and Attitude is a fun song, and Party Starts Now. Those are still part of the Dictator's live sets if you go see them. So. It's like there was certainly some stuff maintained.
Yeah, like Viva Dictators, they play some Manitoba's Wild Kingdom stuff on.
But it's a fun record. I give it like a 7.
I give it a 7 as well. We're on the same plane there.
Tons of fun.
What's your favorite song?
And the music video is definitely worth seeking out because it's pretty hilarious. And seeing these guys knowing their punk personas, trying to act like metal guys with like the crazy hair, like Handsome Dick. Got his Jufro turned into like this kind of Paul Stanley type hair, but it doesn't really look right. It's like a bandana and like crazy Brussels sprout hair. It's nuts.
It can't be any worse than Ross the Boss dressing in like Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, not at all. They come off great compared to that. But yeah, fun record. And I love the song New York, New York. That's the quintessential Dictator song.
That's a great song. I like that one. I like Haircut and an Attitude too. You know, it's like this is what you got to do to be a rock and roll star.
But it's also a reminder, and maybe one reason those guys were never that big, is they're very much a regional, they come off like a regional act.
Oh, they totally do. They sound more New York than like a lot of bands, like even more so than the Ramones, even more so than, like the Talking Heads and all those other CB's bands really hid that, you know? flash forward, the Dictators get, next, we have a live record in New York.
Which I've never heard. I suspect it's an EP or it had limited release because I've never seen it anywhere.
Is this New York, New York?
Yeah.
Because
I wonder if that was I almost thought it was a relabeling of, you know, the fuck them if they can't take a joke.
It could be. I mean, because I got it on iTunes, listened to it, and it's a live record from that Blood Brothers era, I guess.
Yeah, it's basically the renamed Fuck 'em if they can't take a joke. I think they recalled it.
Cause,
they retitled it New York, New York, and I think my CD is that's what it says. It says New York, New York.
Because it's got Loyola, it's got New York, New York.
Yeah, it's the same album. It's the same album.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. So I did hear it. Okay.
Yes.
So, yeah, you said you give it a 9, I give it a 9 as well. I think it's solid. Okay.
And, now we jump ahead to DFFD.
Yeah, 2001, the Dictators reunite for a new record, DFFD. I'm not quite sure what the lineup is, but I think it's Ross the Boss, Top 10, Andy Chernoff, Handsome Dick.
It's the original lineup, except Thunderbolt Patterson from Manitoba's Wild Kingdom is now the drummer for the Dictators.
And the track listing, we have Who Will Save Rock and Roll, I Am Right, Pussy and Money, Moronic Inferno, It's All Right, What's Up With That, The Savage Beat, In the Presence of a New God, Avenue A, Channel Surfing, Jim Gordon Blues, and Burn Baby Burn. Kind of picks up right where Blood Brothers left off, I think.
It's literally Blood Brothers Part 2.
Part 2.
It's actually, I think, their best record. It's
you think so?
Stunning.
Wow.
I bought this in 2001. I didn't even know about it until, like, the local music critic in Denver picked this as the best rock album of the year.
I could it, and here's the thing. Like, this was when the pop punk thing was huge.
Yeah.
Like, 2001 was when it was entering its final phase, but pop punk was still, like, you know, that new metal were, like, the new 80s hair metal, you know?
Yeah, and when I bought the CD, I listened to this over and over and over again. It was almost like the Cult's Electric for the 2000s.
Yeah, for 2001. Yeah, no, seriously, like, it really, like, knocks all those pop punk albums on their ass. Like,
yeah.
Who Will Save Rock and Roll, I Am Right, Pussy and Money, Moronic. Every song on this is
I totally related to the lyrics. Yeah. Like, it, everything that pissed them off pissed me off at that point in my life.
It still pisses me off when I listen to it.
It's the perfect. It when I listen to it, I have that attitude I had in 2001 and 2002. I'm just like, ah.
On my, I love the like, I love the lyric in Pussy and Money where it's like, what's it all about? Pussy and money. I ain't trying to be cute. I ain't trying to be funny. It's like, I ain't trying to be cute.
I just love the right. Well, Who Will Save Rock and Roll is kind of like this admission at the time that rock and roll was pretty much dead.
Yeah, and that's
which basically they were 10 years ahead of Gene Simmons on that.
Oh, totally, totally. I mean, My Generation's Not the Salvation. Like, when I saw Andy perform that on the acoustic guitar, I was like, oh, well, this is some sad song he's written, you know, about how rock and roll's dead when I saw him play it. Because that was the first time I'd ever heard the song.
Yeah.
Was this slowed down,
oh, wow,
sad version.
I couldn't even imagine that.
Seriously, like, when I first heard it, it was this, it sounded like this, like, because he played it, and he's talking about Joey Ramone dying of cancer,
mm-hmm.
and he plays Who Will Save Rock and Roll on the acoustic guitar. It sounds like this dirge for rock music.
Yeah, you know, like, and on this album, it's a call to arms.
It really is. No, but it was like, it was totally different. Like, it felt like a, like somebody at the end of the world saying, who will save us, you know, when he said,
yeah,
it
was, it was over. It was just, well, I mean, at that time, real rock music, the way I consider it to be rock music,
mm-hmm.
was represented in the small clubs by, it would be bands like Turbo Negro, Nashville Pussy, John Spencer Blues Explosion,
mm-hmm.
The Dictators. It was not what was the mainstream. Like, the closest we had was, like, The Strokes. That was the most rocking
right.
thing and, out that year. And
like, because the,
they sounded, they were just a television ripoff. I mean, they were okay.
Because,
the first
like by the time the pop punk music, it became, like, rock for girls, basically.
It was. It was, like, I always say about how hair metal was for girls.
Yeah, it,
and
it, it was
that's
appealing.
What pop punk became.
Well, and here's the thing is,
girls.
Here's the thing is, like, all popular music always is appealing to chicks. Like,
yeah.
And it's because they spend the most money. That's
yep.
That's what it comes down to.
They're the ones calling up the record, the radio stations, and requesting a song be played.
Yeah, they're the ones spending money on everything. My dad said that's why he can't go to the mall. He can't go anywhere. He says because he said, like, he goes, everybody just tries to appeal to little girls, and that's why I can't participate in mainstream culture.
Well, that's why movies are so bad right now.
Totally, totally.
And here we are back to the He-Man Woman Haters Club portion.
No, totally, totally. It's
but
is.
That's true. That's
but
what
like,
movies
like,
are
look,
all designed for girls.
Look, like you and I were both in awe of Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah,
biggest movie that weekend. Pitch Perfect too.
Exactly.
You know, that's who spends money.
All the skirts went to see it. Yay!
But you know
she
what?
Says,
every,
she
every,
says to me, "You go see Mad Max. I'll go see Pitch Perfect too."
It's so funny though. Like I have so many friends who messaged me saying, "I just saw Mad Max. It's so awesome. You were right." You know?
Yeah.
They're slowly the cult of Max is growing. It's just it's a slow burn. You know?
It's a summer's cult movie, basically.
Mm-hmm. But so DFFD. What's your favorite song on this one?
I love the Moronic Inferno.
That's a good one.
That's like the anti-California song.
It really is. It's like California just drop off into the sea.
California is going to crumble into the sea. No more Beach Boys harmony. And then you hear, just like a Beach Boys. It's an amazing song. And it also the guitar work, it takes the Who's I'm Free and also takes Montrose's ripoff of that song, which I think was Space Station Number 9. And so it totally has that big rock sound.
Mm-hmm. That's a band that we should look at in the future, Montrose.
Oh, yeah. Montrose is amazing.
Like, no Montrose, no Van Halen, you know.
No Y&T.
No Y&T.
a lot of the metal bands in the 70s, 80s, I don't think you have.
I think Gene Simmons was saying, like, Montrose, that first record came out when American bands just weren't producing great rock music.
He right, said, and it's still an amazing record to this day.
Yeah, I found a really good copy on used on vinyl the other day.
Really I should actually just seek it out for myself, and because I have like a Montrose compilation that has most of the rock record.
Well, in every time I go to the used record store, I always see Paper Money and the jacket's falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but finally I found a really, really well preserved copy of the first record.
That's back when Sammy Hagar really, really was the Red Rocker.
Yeah, dude.
There really was one way to rock.
Before he became Hard Rock's Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah.
By the way, crazy drama with Van Halen lately.
I can't even keep up.
Oh,
I can't even keep up.
Was it Eddie Van Halen said he can sing with more soul and more heart than Michael Anthony can.
Jeez.
He said that he had to teach Michael Anthony all the bass parts before every tour. And Sammy released a video saying Eddie Van Halen's a liar. And none of what he said is true, that Michael Anthony's a perfectly confident bass player and a great singer. And all that stuff. But I was just like, I was thinking Eddie's totally like, he's been a drunk psychopath for a long time. Like
a bit.
But anyway, crazy drama with Van Halen lately. And, you know, it was just kind of funny considering, you know, the live record they put out and the sort of controversy with that. You know, him talking about singing when the new record, like, all anybody could talk about is how bad Dave sounds on it.
Yeah, but truth was, Dave always...
Yeah, well, that's what you know, Eddie Trunk said. He said Dave was never a great singer.
The handsome Dick Manitoba of Van Halen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, whoa!
But, no, you know, I mean, I was perfectly fine with the new Van Halen live record.
I haven't heard it yet.
Granted, when you hear Jump, it's pretty goddamn rough.
Yeah.
Like, oh!
He could never sing that line.
Yeah, but that's the thing is Dave was never a great singer, so I'm okay with it. Like, cause I listen to David Lee Roth for the personality.
He's a frontman. He's not a singer.
Exactly.
He's a handsome Dick Manitoba or like a Mick Jagger. I don't think Mick Jagger's that good of a singer. You know.
But I feel like Eddie's maybe protesting too much or something in the press. I don't know. But he's always been a bit of a weirdo.
The Van Halen brothers are crazy.
Sammy Hagar said, you know, you never know what's going. He goes, you never know what's going on with those guys because they're so dysfunctional.
Yeah, and I don't think Alex even gets along with Eddie.
Michael Anthony called them Beavis and Butthead. Okay,
yeah, he calls them when Roth was feuding with them. I think he called them the Howdy Doody brothers or something.
Okay, so after DFFD, the Dictators put out another live album.
Mm-hmm. This one's did we rate this?
Oh no, yeah. We did. What did we?
What was your favorite song? I said Moronic Inferno. So.
Moronic Inferno. Mine was it's either Pussy and Money, or I Am Right. I'm going to go with Pussy and Money because I can't help but sing along with that one.
Hunter, you sexist.
Okay. I know, right?
Trigger alert.
Trigger warning.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I give it a 10.
Yeah, it's a 10. It's an easy 10.
Yeah, it's...
In fact, I would almost say if you just get one Dictators record, you'd probably want to get this one.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, this is one of the most underrated rock albums of the last decade by far.
Oh, it was absolutely stunning, and when they came to Denver after getting picked for having the best rock CD of the year, the crowd was so small in 2002.
Oh, what a bunch of horseshit.
It was tiny, and they never came back.
And like,
why would they? It's like they couldn't even halfway fill the Bluebird Theater.
Here's the thing. The cover of this album has everything you want. It's got baseball bats.
Mm-hmm.
It's got baseball. It's got women in bikinis. It's got White Castle sliders and pizza. Mm-hmm. What more do you want from life? You
know? It's the most New York record.
And arm wrestling.
It's the most New York record since Ramones Leave Home.
Okay, so after DFFD, the Dictators put out a live album from the mm-hmm. touring cycle called Viva Dictators, and it's got a great cover. It's got the band on the Empire State Building like they're King Kong or something. It has an intro. It's got New York, New York, Haircut and Attitude. So you got some Manitoba's Wild Kingdom stuff on there. Master Race Rock, Avenue A, Baby Let's Twist, Weekend, Pussy and Money, Who Will Save Rock and Roll, The Next Big Thing, Minnesota Strip, What's Up With That, Faster and Louder, I Am Right, Stay, Two Tub Man, and I Live for Cars and Girls.
Yep.
So, yeah, solid live record. I think it's up there with Fuck 'em If They Can't Take a Joke, / New York, New York, whatever you want to call it. I think it's, you know, it's them, like, considering that this is, you know, what, from the 70s to the early 2000s, they still sound great. Like, they don't sound tired, they sound awesome. They still sound fresh. You know, they sound like the same band.
Mm-hmm. Well, this seemed to me like just a way to, it's a good example of how they sounded in the, around that time in the 2000s mm-hmm. when they were on tour. If you saw them, it's a pretty good representation of how they sounded. The only thing is you don't get, it's probably only beef and it's a royalties reason, you'd have to find bootlegs and stuff, but you don't get their covers. Like, they always did Sonic Reducer by the Dead Boys, if you saw them around that time.
Oh, really?
And they do a great version of that, you know, with Handsome Dick Manitoba going, I don't need no mom and dad! You know, so it's they would do that. They would sometimes do MC5 covers, like Call Me Animal, and just, like, there's some really, really great stuff that it's not here because of royalties or, you know, songwriting royalties or whatever, but it's like it'd be great to hear their Sonic Reducer on one of these albums. I think I've got it on like a bootleg from Italy or something, but it's you know, it's a band at the height of its reunion live powers. So yeah, this one's an easy like 9 for me.
Yeah, I'd give it like an 8. I think it's solid, you know, and I think it's kind of like if you like DFFD, you should pick it up. I wouldn't say it's essential, but it's definitely worth owning. I mean, there's nothing they've done that isn't worth owning, I think. But this was the last release, am I right?
Yeah, it's the last Dictators release. Yeah, probably the last you'll ever get.
So what have they been doing since then? Because I know we've had they've played some shows as Dictators, as Manitoba's Wild Kingdom, and currently mm-hmm. like Ross the Boss and Handsome Dick are playing under Dictators NYC. Like, which is sort of like Venom Inc. or, mm-hmm. you know, any of these other bands that have multiple versions out there. But it's just because Chernoff doesn't want to do anything with it, and it's technically his band, so.
Yeah. Well, now that, I mean, they're an oldies act. It's yeah. like, that's just where they are these
they're
days.
Not a recording they're... band.
No, not at all. It's like, I think, didn't Kiss finally admit, like, last year, there's no reason to put out new records?
I think it was this year. I think Paul Stanley said Kiss never needs to put out a new record because there's no reason. Like, they can just play the old songs and, you know, when they put out a new record, yeah. who cares, you know?
Nobody cares about the new records, you know, so it's, that's just the point. The Dictators had their day. It's like they got it about as big as they were going to get, and it's just kind of, at this point, they're a nostalgia trip, and
yep.
I guess I can look forward to never seeing another Denver show, thanks to nobody in the Denver punk scene showing up to that Bluebird.
You hear that, you granola pot-smoking dicks?
The Bluebird show in 2002 with such sparse attendance. Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot.
You missed out.
Yeah, you did. And the funny thing is, I wear my Dictators t-shirt around town. I always have these old punkers. Oh, man! I saw those guys in the 70s! And I was like, where were you in 2002? Jesus, you know.
If you lived here, you let us down.
Yeah.
I know, like, Ross the Boss still does, like, solo stuff. I don't know what Andy Chernoff's up to other than...
Chernoff, I think, is just writing songs. And I was friends with him on MySpace, and I noticed he, like, took a vacation to Vietnam. So...
That's weird.
So apparently he made enough song royalty money, you know, to vacation in Vietnam. I don't know why anybody would really go there, but I guess because it's Anthony Bourdain's favorite place on Earth.
Well, and I know in Handsome Dick and... Ross the Boss do some touring as Dictators NYC.
Yeah. Handsome Dick owns a bar in New York called Manitoba's, and I think they've had some landlord trouble lately or neighbor trouble or neighborhood problems. He also is a DJ or host on the satellite channel for the Underground Garage run by Lil Steven on Sirius XM.
Oh, he's probably making some decent money doing that.
No, he does all right. He's always stayed busy. Manitoba's, I believe, was open even before the Dictators were doing reunion shows.
And it when you look at these guys, it doesn't look like any of them are just like, well, gave up on music. You know, like Ross the Boss has been doing a lot of different things. He's had a lot of different bands like Shaken Street.
I think he's one of those guys you call for ghost guitar work.
Oh, sure.
You know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Motley Crue called them a bunch of times because, you know, I've always heard they didn't play a lick on any of their records. So,
I given their live shows where they just like Vince Neil has all the backtracking and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if Motley Crue does much of anything.
Exactly.
But
I believe Ross the Boss does a lot of ghost guitar, ghost production. I mean, Chernoff did it for the Ramones. So
yeah.
It's not hard to believe.
The thing is, you listen to those Dictators records and you go, these are talented guys. They're talented players. Like, why not, like, bring them in if you're having problems?
Right.
You know,
the funny thing is, Ross Boss is, like, completely conservative.
Oh, he totally is. I follow him on Facebook.
If you follow him on Facebook.
He's like Johnny Ramone. Like,
He's just as right wing as Johnny Ramone. It's so funny because you'll see a guy like, what's his name for the Dead Boys? We'll post on there and he'll get mad, too. Cheetah Chrome. Cheetah Chrome's super liberal lefty, and he gets, I'm tired of you conservatives calling us commies. it's just hilarious. Like, Ross the Boss he'll do a political post. It'll be the most simplistic thing, like, oh, listen to this guy on Fox News, and there'll be 2,000 responses. He's hilarious.
And I love, and you can see it in the Manowar records, where, like, you have a dude covered in muscles, like, with an American flag wrapped around him.
To me, a guy like Ross the Boss, that's Yankee Stadium and the American flag flying, and, you know, Ross the Boss is, that's America right there.
He is a real American, and, you know, you listen to songs like I Am Right, you know, I Stand Tall.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even though they're written by Chernoff, I feel like I get some of his personality in there.
Yeah, definitely, especially with his playing, but yeah, I like, Ross the Boss is probably my favorite member. That Manitoba is a trip too. So
yeah, well, you should listen to some Manowar, John. Try to get some get some true metal.
Oh boy! You know, whenever I was in the office, and you always get those kind of chain emails of the worst album covers of all time. It was always Manowar.
Oh, Manowar is always on there.
There was always Thor, Keep the Dogs Away. You know, which is a great record actually.
Give Battle Hymns a shot.
Okay.
I want you to give Battle Hymns a shot, and I want you to tell me what you think. If you think it's a piece of shit, don't listen to anymore. But, you know.
Yeah, the sad thing is everybody on Facebook will see that I was listening to Manowar on Spotify.
Hey, I have Battle Hymns on vinyl, okay? I've also got their second album. I found it at Half Price Books.
I can't imagine what people thought when I actually gave the latest Miley Cyrus album a spin on Spotify.
Oh, I didn't see that. I didn't see John listen to bangers. I probably would have had a stroke if I saw that. Well, that's it for the Dictators, I think. Do you have anything else you want to add?
Get DFFD and get Blood Brothers, and I think you're set for a while in the Dictators.
You know what? I say buy all of them. Just buy all the records. Like,
buy all of them, but keep in mind our my criticisms about some of the sound on the early records and stuff, and the band still trying to find its footing. But
listen to it anyway. I say, buy them all. Don't download them illegally. Buy them.
No, actually go out and buy them. Totally, you're going to want to. And that's the interesting thing is, I think Good Girl Crazy got a vinyl reissue like 10 years ago.
Oh, really? I got to hunt
when I was like, who the hell is going to buy this? I didn't think vinyl was coming back. And then, you know, then the headlines are everywhere.
Yeah, it's, you know, whole stores now. I say buy all the records. But yes, if nothing else, DFFD, Blood Brothers. I love Go Girl Crazy. I love that album. Even though Chernoff's no handsome dick when it comes to singing.
Well, Go Girl Crazy is a proto, what I call a proto punk record.
Yeah.
That, like, after the Stooges and the MC5 imploded, you had this kind of 2 or 3 years of bands like the Dictators, the Blue Oyster Cult, and the Gizmos out of the, I believe, Indiana or somewhere in the Midwest, put out these kind of what I call proto punk records where it had the attitude and the humor. But didn't quite catch on as a new music genre. They were just the rock records of that time. But they influenced all the guys who came later, like the Ramones and the Dead Boys.
Absolutely.
Oh, and Rocket from the Tombs would be part of that as well.
Well, cool, man. Well, next week, Stuart's going to be back. Hopefully he had some crap happen that he just couldn't show up, which I'm bummed because I wanted to hear what he thought of these albums. But as you said, I'm sure he liked them. But next week, we're going to be talking about the king of rock and roll, and it's not Elvis. We're going to be talking about the wild man himself, you know, the Duke of the Wild Kingdom.
Mr. Engelbert Humperdinck.
Yes.
It's about time we got around.
Yes, it's about time we got around to Engelbert Humperdinck. This episode has been a technical nightmare, so I think we should end it.
Definitely.
Yeah. And this always happens whenever Stuart's not around.
Yeah. So it's a curse.
Yeah. So that's all his fault. He did this. Him and Janie Lane caused this to happen.
You fucked us now.
Yeah, I know. We're screwed. It's never going to get done. So I have my work cut out for me. Anyway, Rock Month concludes next week. I also want to do a mini-sode on the Quiet Riot documentary. I want to do an episode on that with Stu, but like a short one, like the Ginger Baker one.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm just spitballing. All right, guys. Anything else you want to say, John?
No. That's it.
All right. Adios.
All right. Mahalo.
Mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time. Yeah.